This is Carol Foster of 2 Timothy 2:15 Resources, and I am so excited that you're going to join me today as we study God's Word. The response new Messianic believers give when asked why they initially visited a Messianic congregation is, "We knew there had to be more." As we study together, we will begin to see that yes, indeed, there has to be more. For additional study aids to assist you in studying along with us, go to our website, sectim.org. Welcome back to There Has to Be More and our current study, an overview of the Tanakh, or the Old Testament. Now, remember the goal of the study is to determine for each book the author, during what time period was it written, why did the author write this book, who was it written to, what was the purpose of this book, and finally, how does it apply to us today? I want to review the main points that we've discovered so far. We have discovered that the Pentateuch, or the first five books, appears to have been written by Moshe, Moses. Although the book of Bereshit, Genesis, does not identify its author in its pages, traditionally it has been attributed to Moshe, and with good reason. The other books of the Pentateuch connect Moshe to their writing, and most of biblical literature treats the Pentateuch as a unit. It is therefore understandable that Moshe came to be considered the author of the entire Pentateuch, or the first five books of the Tanakh. As has been noted often, who better to put together the books of beginnings than Moshe? When was Bereshit written? Well, given that man had not been created at the dawning of time, or that man could not have witnessed all that transpired, biblical scholars believe that this book was written during the 40 years that the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness. That would be between 1450 and 1410 B.C. There's one more thing I would like to address regarding the very first verse of chapter 1 in the book of Bereshit, or Genesis. I want to read verses 1 and 2 so that we may stay in context. These verses set the foundation for the rest of the entire Bible. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. Created, or the Hebraic word bara, is used in the Tanakh consistently in reference to a new activity. It forms a sound connection with the previous in the beginning. Did you notice that the three initial letters are the same, Bereshit and Bara? It occurs in the creation account six times. It occurs in chapter 1, verse 1, verse 21, and three times in verse 27, then in chapter 2, verse 3, and in chapter 2, verse 4a. The origin of this term is disputed and is of little help, but its frequent appearance in the Tanakh enables us to define its meaning with some security. The striking feature of this word is that its subject is always Elohim, or God, as creator. It therefore conveys the idea of a special activity accomplished only by deity that results in newness or a renewing. Also, bara always refers to the product created and does not refer to the material of which it is made. For these reasons, commentators have traditionally interpreted the verb as a technical term for creating out of nothing. In doing so, it's often contrasted with the verb asah, which means to make or to do. Now, this particular verb asah, or making, is used where making involves existing material. As the argument goes, asah can refer to human activity in which pre-existing material is transformed, but bara is used exclusively of Elohim's activity with no presence of pre-existing material. The word is used throughout the Bible only with Jehovah as its subject. As an example, I asah, or I make a quilt. I make this quilt out of existing, pre-existing materials for a new creation, but I did not create initial materials used. We find that the motifs and the structure of the creation account are introduced in the first two verses of chapter 1. that the universe is Jehovah's creative work and is perfectly expressed by the statement, God created the heavens and the earth. The three major sections of Bereshit are characterized by distinct literary types. The early events, Bereshit chapters 1 through 11, are written in a poetic narrative form to help in oral transmission. The accounts of the first three patriarchs in chapters 12 through 36, and then again in 38, are reports that ancestors and they were retained as family records. The Yosef or Joseph narrative found in Bereshit chapter 37 and then in chapters 39 through 50 is a short story containing tension and resolution. Within each of these major literary types, however, are other minor types such as genealogies and narratives in which Jehovah appears, words from Jehovah, blessings and tribal sayings. Bereshit represents history in every sense of the term. We can divide the book of Bereshit, then, into three major sections. Each one of these sections can be divided into subsections. The first major section would be titled Elohim's Plan for His Creation, and this covers chapter 1, verse 1, through chapter 2, verse 25. The subsections then would be A, the place, Eden as Earth's place of beginning. We find this in chapter 1, verses 1 through 25. The second subsection, B, the people, Adam and Eve as parents of the world's population. We find this in chapter 1, verses 26 through chapter 2, 25. The second major section that we have, we could title Elohim's Curse on the Violation of His Creation. This consists of chapter 3, verse 1, through chapter 7, verse 24. The first subsection, A, we could title Primary Recipients. The earth was cursed and Adam and Eve cast out of Eden. We find this in chapter 3, verses 1 through 24. And then B, the secondary recipients, the creation destroyed by the flood, chapter 4, verses 1 through chapter 7, verse 24. The final major section we could title Elohim's Covenant for a New Creation. This is found in chapter 8, verse 1 through chapter 50, verse 26. There are five subsections in this section, major section. A, God's covenant through a new people, and this is about Noah or Noah. We see this in chapter 8, verse 1 through chapter 11, verse 32. B, God's covenant through Abraham. We see this in chapter 12, verse 1 through chapter 21, verse 34. C, God's promises through Abraham's son Yitzhak, chapter 22, verse 1 through 26, verse 35. D, God's promises through Abraham's grandson Yaakov, or Jacob. We find this in chapter 27, verse 1 through chapter 36, verse 43. Then the final one is God's promises through Abraham's great-grandson, Yosef, or Joseph. This is found in chapters 37, 1 through chapter 50, verse 26. We will briefly be covering each section. Remember that this study is an overview. It is not an in-depth study of each book of the Tanakh. Our first section covers Bereshit, chapter 1, verse 1, through chapter 2, verse 25. I'm not going to be reading each scriptural reference, but will be reading the ones that I think are imperative for each section. If you're following the study, you might want to read each section of scripture as we continue. The divisions and their subtopics will be available on my website, www.sectim.org. They're free PDF downloads. Please register and sign in to the site so that I can tell if this material is being used. Also, it would be great if you would let me know if these materials are helpful for you. Our first subsection, chapter 1, verses 1 through chapter 2, verse 25. This is Elohim's plan for his creation. In the overview of this section, we find that the first half of this section opens with a title, In the Beginning, God created the heavens and earth, and closes by again identifying itself as a report of that creation. This is the account of the creation of the heavens and the earth. The words of chapter 2, verse 4, restate the title, which we read in chapter 1, verse 1, and they end the opening section on creation. These verses show the original nature of creation in three ways. First, the creation revealed the character of its creator, Elohim. The nation of Israel and redeemed people of all ages need to know that Elohim is the supreme creator of the universe, the one who creates merely by speaking a word. Second, the original creation was very good. Believers need to know that everything Elohim created was very good. Elohim is not one who approximates what is best in his creation, nor does he need help to finish a good job. All that he touches by his creative powers is supremely good. Third, the original creation displayed its purpose. Believers need to know that creation was intended to continue being very good, and that humanity's role in that process was one of working together with Elohim to rule the earth and, in ruling, to obey his guidelines. Secondly, we find that Eden was earth's place of beginnings. The heart of the creation account is revealed by the repetition of these three phrases. The first, "And God said." Elohim's word was the potent force behind creation, and it laid the foundation for the authority of his future words. You can read an example of this in Hebrews chapter 11, verses 1 through 3. The second phrase that we want to look at is, "And it was so." Elohim speaks and it happens. The sure and potent force of the Creator is behind any of the words he will speak, whether for judgment or for salvation. And the final phrase that we see repeated, "And God saw that it was good." We can find this phrase in Genesis chapter 1, verse 4, verse 10, verse 12, 18, 21, 25, and 31. Why is there a repetition of these words? What made creation good? It was the fact that it was exactly the way the Creator wanted it to be. It was a perfect manifestation of His will and purpose. The repeated declaration of creation's goodness forms one pole or point in history. The second pole or point in history is the recreation of the new heavens and earth at the end of the age. The goodness of the first and last creations forms the framework for understanding both the horror of the evil and the hope for restoration that comes to believers today who stand between these two poles or points. Now, two major and differing translations of Bereshit chapter 1, verses 1 and 2 are believed to be true today. The first translation reads, "When God began to create the heavens and the earth was formless and empty." This translation focuses on the state of the earth before Elohim began the creative activity that's recorded in the Bereshit account. Those who accept this translation believe that Elohim's historical involvement with creation began after the earth already existed in its formless and empty state. That is, the earth was formless and empty, and then Elohim began to create. According to this view, the Bereshit does not address how the earth originally came into existence in its formless and empty state, but what Elohim did with a world already in existence. Now, the second translation reads, "In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was empty, a formless mass." This traditional translation teaches that Elohim created everything out of nothing. Remember our word bara? Therefore, his first step was to create the earth, which prior to that time did not exist, and he created it without form and population. It was empty. Elohim then proceeded to shape and populate the world he had made, as witnessed by the Bereshit account. Although the validity of either translation cannot be proven by grammar and syntax alone, The second translation is preferred for several reasons. First of all, a literary comparison of "in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth," as found in verse 1, and "this is the account of the creation of the heavens and earth," found in chapter 2, verse 4, supports the idea that in chapter 1, verse 1, this is the first part of a literary framework within which the creation account is presented. And Bereshit, chapter 2, verse 4, stands as the closing phrase for this literary unit, and it refers backward, not forward, ending the account of creation as begun in chapter 1, verse 1. This framework, with its beginning and ending statement, substantiates the argument, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth," being independent of "the earth was empty and a formless mass," and stands alone as a comprehensive statement of Elohim's creative work. We see that Bereshit, chapter 1, verse 1, is a title that refers to the whole creative process described in Bereshit, chapter 1, verse 2, through chapter 2, verse 3. It's not a simple introduction that notes when Elohim began to create. Literary form supports the conclusion that chapter 1, verse 1 is an independent and general statement of Elohim's total creative activity from its start to its Sabbath wholeness. Another argument supporting the second translation points out that the phrase "heavens and earth" functions much like the English idioms A to Z, or top to bottom. It is a phrase that covers not only the heaven and the earth, but everything in between as well. This involved the heavens, the earth, and again, everything in between. The first subsection of Elohim's plan for his creation begins in chapter 1, verse 1, and concludes in verse 25. Some see a time gap between chapter 1, verse 1, and verse 2, in which they place long geological ages and chaos stemming from the fall of Hasatan to earth. If, however, Elohim originally created the earth as formless and empty, there is no need for such a gap. Let me read these verses to you. "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters." Verse 2 introduces three environments for Elohim's first step in creation. First, an empty and formless earth. Second, a formless mass cloaked in darkness. And three, the Spirit of Elohim hovering over the surface. The words "formless and empty" can be literally translated "unformed and unfilled." This phrase is a literary key to the creation account. In the first 3 days, the earth was formed, and in the second three, it was filled. The arrangement of these first 6 days shows a clear order in Elohim's creation. Just as a reminder, again on my ministry site, www.sectim.org, I will be putting this information as well as other additional study aids. These are available as free PDF downloads. Please register and sign in so that I know that these materials are being used, and leave a comment if you're finding that they are helpful. Days 1, 2, and 3 move creation from a formless to a formed state. Days 4, 5, and 6 move creation from an empty to a filled state. Order and population form the thrust of God's creative work. Many argue that the six creative days of Bereshit, chapter 1, involve millions of years, not literally 24-hour days. This view is essential to the evolutionary hypothesis that requires long time periods for mutation and natural selection. However, the terms evening and morning suggest days of normal length. Throughout the Old Testament, or the Tanakh, the word day is never used figuratively when accompanied by a number. Whether they are interpreted as literal or figurative days, Elohim fashioned the literary portrayal of his creation of the universe around six literal days. If something other than literal days is in view, then the text uses the term day as a figurative speech. Although normal word usage upholds the argument for literal days, the creation narrative's literary form of elevated and poetic prose and the desire to correlate the days of creation with long geological ages by science leaves room for a figurative use of the word day as well. In verses 26 of chapter 1 through chapter 2, verse 25, we could title this subsection as The People, Adam and Eve as parents of the world's population. Now, this is the second subsection in our main topic, Elohim's plan for his creation. Some believe that chapter 2, verses 4 through 25, records a different account of creation than the account given in chapter 1. This belief arises in part from viewing 2, verse 4, as an introduction to what follows it, rather than a conclusion to what preceded it. Whichever view is taken, these verses actually presuppose and elaborate on events that happened on the sixth day of creation, as mentioned again in chapter 1, verses 24 through 31. Thus, Bereshit 1 outlines Elohim's creation of the world and everything in it, while chapter 2 details the creation of man and woman. Our second subtopic we could title Humanity's Physical and Moral Limitations. We find this in chapter 1, verses 26 through chapter 2, verse 17. It's important to notice that the end of Bereshit 1 and the beginning of Bereshit 2 take the creation account one step further by clarifying the following three roles which mankind was to fill. Mankind's first role was to populate the earth. We see that in chapter 1, verse 28. This reveals some aspects of nature and the abilities of men and women. People were created to be members of families. Everyone was created to be a social creature, the image and likeness of Elohim. I want to read verses 26 and 28 of chapter 1. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the sky, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." God created them in his own image. In the image of God he created him. Male and female he created them. God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth, and subdue it, and rule over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the sky, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." We see that these two verses are most immediately linked to humanity's power to rule over creation, and to reflect the nature and graces of male and female gender. Human rule over the earth reflects Elohim's perfect and sovereign rule over the universe. Human gender reflects his infinitely deep character as the potent creator and the perfectly wise, loving, and nurturing person. Elohim likeness passed on to Adam's son Seth, as we read in chapter 5, verse 1 and 13. Ultimately, every human shares in Elohim's likeness, as we read in Yaakov or James, chapter 3, verse 9. We who have been made in the likeness of God. But the redeemed person undergoes a process of more perfect conformity to his image, as we read in Colossians chapter 3, verse 10, and have put on the new self, who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. And then in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 23 and 24, we read that mankind's image is more fully described as conformity to being righteous, holy, and pure. And we then are renewed in the spirit of our mind and put on the new self, which in the likeness of God has been created in righteousness and holiness of earth. Then in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 23 and 24, we read that mankind's image is more fully described as conformity to being righteous and holy. They read, "And that you be renewed in the spirit of your mind and put on the new self, which in the likeness of God has been created in righteousness and holiness of truth." Join us next time as we continue looking at the roles that Elohim has already predestined for humanity. Thank you for joining us today as we delved into the beautiful truths of God's Word to indeed discover that there has to be more. I pray that the Word applied to your daily life will bring a deeper understanding of His love letter written just to you. Let me remind you that we have additional study aids to assist you with our studies together on our website. It's secTIM.org. May this day fill you with the love of God, joy, and shalom. Nothing missing, nothing broken in your life.